This is John Wilkerson, host of 10 the Podcast. Have a seat in the front row. You're listening to Finding Christ in Cinema on the Great Commission Transmission Network.
On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we climb aboard the Rita and set sail for South America and look for Christian themes in Creature from the Black Lagoon. How does the Gillman help us explore the human condition? How does mercy still shine through? All that and more in 3, 2, 1. Come on in, admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 152. I'm Michael.
I'm Brendan.
Join us, and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, the plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation and ultimately our Christian walk. You're tuned in to Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Last week, coming off of the Coen brothers' No Country for Old Men.
The happiest film you can ever see.
Yes, it was good. A solid feel-good movie.
Sure, fun for the whole family.
Yes, with a happily ever after ending.
Yes.
No, none of those things.
Oh, what?
Actually, a great look into existentialism, right? And the futility of life, as I guess how the Coen brothers see it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Futility.
Futility.
Meaningless.
The absurdism.
Yes.
Yeah.
So a little esoteric, a little existentialism.
Sure.
You know, and it got me thinking, one of their films that we will not cover is The Big Lebowski.
Sure.
And throughout that film, there are these protagonists, or antagonists, I'm sorry, the antagonists that directly, some of them, there are several antagonists in that film, but
yeah, that's true.
One group of them specifically claim to be nihilists.
Oh, yes.
And that's where John Goodman's character said, oh, nihilists, I hate nihilists, right?
Yeah.
What do you do with them? But so there you go. If you haven't watched that film in a while, go and watch it and then listen to our last episode, episode number 151, and listen to the Christian themes that we pull out of No Country for Old Men. Did you have any addendums, afterthoughts? Oh, and another thing.
I did not.
No.
No.
There's nothing to add to that, huh?
No, we got it.
We had to work hard enough as it was.
That's right.
Hey, a big howdy to all you that are tuned in Coffee County, and especially you people that are driving on I-24 coming up from Georgia, coming down from Kentucky, and all points in between and beyond that, because what, the 24, you can take that all the way down to Florida?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, the 24 intersects with plenty of other interstates as well. But if this is the first time that you are hearing our voices, tune in to ChristInCinema.com or search for ChristInCinema.com in your favorite podcatcher, and you can listen to all of our episodes where we pull Christian themes out of your favorite movies. Brendan, what are we talking about today?
Today we're taking it back just a few years.
Turning back the clock?
Yeah, I think you were a little child at this time.
Oh boy, ageism. Right off the bat, right at the top of the show.
We're talking about The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
1954, Universal monster movie. You ready to go to the theater?
I sure am.
Couldn't explain it, but there it was, alive in the deep, deep waters of the Amazon. A throwback to a creature that had existed 100 million years ago, immensely strong and destructive. A woman's beauty, the bait that brought it out of its lair. See underwater thrills never photographed before, See Titanic underwater battles never dreamed of before in this most terrifying of the science fiction adventures.
This is my kind of movie.
Oh,
I
right.
love Universal Monster movies. And I haven't watched Creature from the Black Lagoon in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Many years, as a matter of fact. And last year, I believe it was Christmas, my daughter got me a Blu-ray of this film. It actually has a glow-in-the-dark cover. Whoops, I'm knocking it down here in the studio.
Now
I can't. Now I can't reach it.
Oh, no.
And it came with the digital copy as well. And I just, I love this film. I'm so happy that we chose to cover this one this year as part of our
Octoberween.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have lots of well-mannered frivolity planned
for
this
one. Yeah, we like to do a Universal monster movie, a classic scary movie, and then, you know, just whatever else we might be feeling at that time.
What have we covered in the past, Brendan?
What have we covered?
The Witch?
The Witch. Oh, my goodness.
Oh.
We did The Witch by Roger Eggers. I can't, name escapes me at the time.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember that.
But it came out a couple years ago with Anya Taylor-Joy and Ralph Ineson. Man,
yeah.
I actually just watched that yesterday, and I had to watch Hocus Pocus right after it to cleanse my palate. you know, there's The Witch, and then there's Hocus Pocus. And it's a nice pairing.
Now, last year for Octoberween, when we did The Witch, we also did, for a good palate cleanser, was Goosebumps.
Was Goosebumps, yeah. Now, that one actually is a family film.
Yes, with Jack Black.
Yes, Jack Black, Dylan Minnette, and a couple other people I can't remember.
Right.
But it was a fun film. Our monster movie was... The Invisible Man.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's Claude Rains. Claude Rains. That was a fantastic discussion that we had on that. We have also covered films during Halloween season, such as
The Shining.
The Shining.
Oh, my goodness.
Speaking of Stephen King.
Oh, it was a moon landing thing. That's all it was.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? Made that. What else have we covered?
I can't remember right now.
This is our third year, I believe, of dedicating October to Halloween films, mm-hmm. monster films, sci-fi.
Because we didn't do it that first year.
That's correct. And so going back to 1954, and again, I love this film, and I think it is a fantastic character study. I mean, it really has everything that a film or a story should have, as mm-hmm. far as I'm concerned. There's drama. Because the hens come home to roost.
Sure.
Correct. There's romance. There's the human condition. And there's a monster.
Hey.
Which every good story should have a monster.
I was thinking
about that. And that is really the... isn't that what most stories are about? Fighting some kind of a monster?
Mm-hmm.
A monster in some form?
Mm-hmm.
It can take many different shapes and forms.
That's
but
right.
Going all the way back to one of the very oldest stories that we are aware of is the Epic of Gilgamesh. And what does Gilgamesh and his counterpart that was created in order to keep Gilgamesh under control, Enkidu, they go after that monster, that raging bull of heaven, or what have you. That's thousands and thousands of years old, a monster story.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go on all the way up to, you know, many hundreds of years ago, Beowulf.
Yeah.
It's a monster story,
mm-hmm.
but it's much more than that. A monster is just a vehicle, is just a tool, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything to say about that genre of horror of monsters, of... Things. Why are we, Brendan, as good Christian men, followers of Jesus Christ, why are we covering monster movies on a Christian show?
As I mess with my mic,
yes.
I'm sorry. I like monster movies, and I think you like monster movies as well. As I mess with my mic again. I'm sorry. It has to happen.
Get it under control.
It's only been 4 years.
Oh,
man. I like them because they stir my interest in mystery, and I'm going to go ahead and just say capital M mystery. I'm not talking about Sherlock Holmes walking around with a magnifying glass and a pipe and a deer hunting hat.
As a genre.
I'm not talking about that kind of mystery. I'm talking about things that we as humans don't understand. And mystery, that storytelling element of mystery, awakens us to those things.
Okay. We talked a little bit about that last week with the Coen brothers in No Country for Old Men. And the mysteries of life that they struggle with as filmmakers, as brothers.
Exactly.
And
it's always the case with a monster, whether it's the Raging Bull of Heaven in Gilgamesh, or whether it's Liam Neeson's character in A Monster Calls. It's almost like we're shown the monster, and immediately we have all these preconceived notions about, oh, what does the monster mean? What's he trying to tell us? When really we have to take the monster at its face value.
Which is more on an emotional level.
Mm-hmm.
And so it elicits those emotions as well.
It ceases to be allegory, and it becomes more of a subjective...
Would you say a vehicle, whatever, a device?
Yeah.
Would you say that is a positive thing, or the effects?
Positive in what way?
What the purpose that the monster serves? Does it plant seeds or sow a field, or does it soften a heart, or does it harden a heart, or does it make people receptive to the underlying story? What the story is really truly about?
Well, I think it would depend on the monster.
Well, we were talking a little bit about this before the mics went hot, discussing the new Stephen King adaptation of It,
mm-hmm.
and how people are complaining, well, it's not really a horror film. Well, Stephen King doesn't really do the slasher films, that if you consider that horror. I don't consider slasher films as horror. I consider them as a separate genre all unto themselves.
Sure.
Slasher films.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen King is using Pennywise the Clown, or he's using any of the characters, you know, Cujo or Christine or
Kathy Bates' character.
The character in Misery. Mm-hmm. Using these things in order to, I don't know if it's to shock you into opening up a little bit, maybe, or perhaps it's the effect like lowers your defenses, even though you believe that you're raising them up. It's a way to slip in the greater message of the story underneath this monster.
Hmm.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I think I know what you're saying. It's almost like I would almost say it's the opposite of sympathy.
In what way?
In that sympathy elicits a softening method or a connotation, whereas a jump scare or a truly horrifying and suspenseful scene in a movie, it's not so much as sympathy as it is shock value. And the shock acts more like a chisel rather than a softening method.
Wow.
Or something. Does that make sense?
It does. And let me use this illustration.
Okay.
As we're waxing poetic here.
We are.
Let's think of the balloon, because we were talking about It, and so, of course, there's always that red balloon floating mm-hmm. through. Well, think of a balloon as us, and then if the monster comes and puts a needle in that, does it close up, or does it, you know, it explodes? It's wide open. It's an open wound.
Whatever is inside immediately becomes outside.
Yes.
And we are shaken.
So, yeah, boy, we are getting really philosophical
This is weird. So let's talk about Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Well, and what effect does that creature have in this film, and what does it, what's the greater underlying story? We'll get into those things, but what about the craft of this film? You know what? One thing, let me point this out. I love that these older monster films are like an hour and 15 minutes, an hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
I really do wish that modern filmmakers would take a cue.
Get back to that.
From the silver screen, the classic.
Except for Jeff Nichols. You can make as long movies as you want.
He sure can. Oh, I'm sorry. You meant that?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I think so. That's what I meant to come in.
Talk about The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Let's talk about it. This was the first time I'd ever seen it. I've always heard about it. Last year when we were talking about The Invisible Man with, you know, Claude Rains.
Saints, Claude Ray.
I talked about getting an action figure from Spencer's Gifts that was a little 11-inch replica of the Invisible Man. I remember at that same moment when I was looking at the Invisible Man, the creature from the Black Lagoon is right there beside it. And I just remember seeing it. He was green. He was fishy. He was scaly. I didn't realize he was called Gill Man at the time, but that's what he's been. That's what he has become dubbed. To be known. Yeah, dubbed. Yes. What I like about this film is that it, this is my own personal,
of course,
subjective opinion, is that it's really simple. However, it seems to provide a lot of the foundation for a lot of suspense horror thrillers that we see today.
In what way?
The most powerful scene in this film to me is Julie Adams swimming, and the camera keeps cutting between her on top of the water and the monster right underneath. And there's like a whole 3-minute sequence of back and forth, back and forth. She doesn't know that the monster's there. We do. That is suspense. That's like what Alfred Hitchcock calls, you've got the one type of storytelling where you see two gentlemen sitting at a table and then boom, a bomb explodes. But then you've got another side that shows the two gentlemen sitting at the table, and then you cut to under the table and you see the bomb ticking down.
That brings us into the suspense.
That's suspense.
Yes.
And then it keeps going back and forth from gentleman, clock, gentleman, clock, gentleman, clock, boom. And this, it was Julie Adams, monster. Or what's her character's name? Kay?
Kay.
Kay, monster. Kay,
Gilman.
Monster.
Kay, Gilman. Kay, Gilman.
There you go. And it was very, I feel like at the time, it was very innovative. And it was good. I think it was good to like watch back and see how they did it first. Like, I'm not saying that this movie is the first movie to ever do it, but from my own personal perspective, this is one of the forerunners.
This is a highly regarded movie in that aspect, visuals and the underwater scenes and such. This is a highly rated film.
Yeah, especially with the underwater hunting scene.
That's right.
In the third act. Very powerful stuff to see the monster wrestling with the doctor, and then also wrestling with the rich guy. I forget their names at the moment, but
you have Richard Carlson, mm-hmm. Dr. Richard Carlson, and you have Richard Carlson as David Reed,
Dr. David Reed,
and then you have
or is he a doctor?
Well, he's an ichthyologist.
Yes, okay, right? Yeah.
And then you have his boss is Mark Williams, played by Richard Denning.
Yes.
Wow,
the rich guy.
Well, he finances these.
Yeah, the financier. Yeah.
Yes. And well, we just jumped into characters. Let's start doing some shout outs then.
Well, let's go ahead and do it. First, let's talk about Julie Adams,
please.
Props to her, because according to IMDb, she did her own stunts in this movie.
Hey,
she did all of her own stunts.
Wow.
Yeah,
she said, "I can lay down on the ground just as well as a stunt person can.
That's
I can scream.
That's right. I can be tackled by a monster and thrown into a body of water.
Hey, yes, he did. He grabbed her and jumped off of the boat. That's you know, things could go wrong doing things like that.
Yeah, but and things apparently somewhere along the line, it did go wrong.
Yes.
On accident.
Oh, really?
Because, first, let's talk about the eponymous character of this story, the creature himself, Gillman, played by two different stuntmen, played by two different actors. Underwater, it was Rico Browning, and on land, it was Ben Chapman.
All right.
And there were actually two different suits. There were, one was made lighter, a lighter color, so it could show up underwater better. And then one was made of that darker, darker green. Yeah, sorry. And the two actors, it's when he's coming out of the water and he's entering his underground lair, and he's got Kay in his arms. Apparently, during one of the takes, he hit Kay's head on one of the prop walls.
Oh no!
She didn't go unconscious or anything. That was the rumor. But apparently it did. He did hit her, and they had to, like, oh gosh, is she okay? A little minute panic. So
There you go. Like, there's drama on the set.
There you go. And another thing about Julie Adams, and I think she in this quote, she talks about something that we're going to talk about, and something that we've already started talking about. This is, again, from IMDb Trivia. Julie Adams noted that making the film was an extremely pleasant process and that the cast and crew got along quite well. She also explained that she felt sympathetic toward the monster. Quote, "There is always a feeling, or there always is that feeling of compassion for the monster. I think maybe it touches something in ourselves. Maybe the darker parts of ourselves that long to be loved and think they really can't ever be loved.
Huh.
It strikes a chord within us."
Wow.
And that's Julie Adams. This is not Mary Poppins.
No.
This is a creature from the Black Lagoon. This is Julie Adams playing Kay, talking about her experience on the set, making this movie, filming these scenes, being this character.
Wow.
And I think she taps in. I think she taps into it. Now, that's all I had to say about her.
Let me tell you something else about her. She appeared in two episodes of Lost.
Really?
She did. I wouldn't lie to you.
I don't know. Oh.
I don't know. I've been racking my brain and trying to look at find pictures and what I can't do. But her character name, and it eludes me right now, as a matter of fact. There are so many actors on that show over time. Amelia. Who is Amelia? Well, anyone out there, if you know, let us know, because that's going to bother me now. I have to know what she was in Lost. How about Richard Carlson as David Reed? I've watched this movie for, you know, all my entire lifetime, but I know him more specifically from another film that I adore, which hopefully, perhaps, maybe we can do next year or some. Well, he was also on the Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea TV series, but a film that came out the year before, was it the year prior to The Creature from the Black Lagoon? It came from outer space, 1953, filmed in 3D at the time. Great film. I have that on VHS in the garage somewhere. I need to pull that out. So I am familiar with him. I do like him. I like his easygoing manner. He has some great chemistry going on with Julie Adams as they're playing a couple of ichthyologists that are a couple of ichthyologists. No. Richard Denning as Mark Williams. What'd you think of him?
I liked him. He kind of came off as like the type of character that says, "Oh, money can solve the world's problems."
Oh, here, there's a little forward.
I happen to have some money,
or I know where to get some.
I know what to
do in order to get some.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, boy, you just you gave a big major tease there for the second half of the show.
Sorry.
Okay. Dr. Carl Maya, played by Antonio Marino. He is the man who initially found the fossil remains.
The skeleton sticking out of the rock, yeah.
What did you think of him? I believe he's of Spanish origin.
In fact,
he was born in Madrid in 1887. So then you had the initial chemistry between he and the characters of David Reed and Kay. Who was the ship captain? Who was the boat captain?
Oh,
was that Lucas?
Maybe.
Nestor, Paiva.
If it was, he was fun.
Yes.
He was a nice guy.
Born in Fresno, California in 1905. I really enjoyed, his acting in this film. So keep an eye on that, friends, when you're watching this film. What else? What else do you want to say about it?
Well, I always like to think of, whenever it comes to a film like this, what is the director trying to get across to us?
What's the story they're telling?
Yeah, exactly.
What's the message?
Yes. And luckily, IMDb has the answer, I think.
Oh.
Again, from their trivia section, director Jack Arnold claimed that his main goal in making this film was to create a sense of dread. And boy, did he.
I believe so.
Let's talk about that three-note fanfare. Dun-dun-dun!
Great soundtrack.
Arnold said, it plays upon a basic fear that people have about what might be lurking below the surface of any body of water. You know the feeling when you are swimming and something brushes your legs down there. It scares the heck out of you. Expletive deleted. If you don't know what it is, it's the fear of the unknown. And I decided to exploit that fear as much as possible.
Now, that doesn't answer the question, I don't think. I think he could have done a better explanation.
I think he could have, too.
Oh, in what way?
In that, well, one thing, he shows us the monster. And if he really wanted to be something of the unknown, he wouldn't have shown us the monster. That's just my personal opinion. And it seems that he was more concerned about creating that fear within the audience. Not necessarily answering any questions, but maybe just prodding questions with that sense of dread that he talks about.
See, this is one of the fun things about this show, is as we're examining the story that's being told, sometimes we pull out messages out of there, a lot of times, as a matter of fact, that I believe that the directors and writers had no intention mm-hmm. of.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me a little bit of Socrates and his journey after receiving word from the oracle at Delphi that he was the wisest of all men, right? And he goes on this journey. Well, I know that's not true. I know that I'm not wise, so I'm going to go and find the people that are wiser than I am and compare and do a little bit of analysis here so I can make sense of what the oracle said. And he visits the artists, the poets, the sophists, right? Mm-hmm. The orators at the time. And that's what I want to focus on. The orators, they were trained in speaking for an effect, to get the response that they're hoping for. And as he's questioning them, he realizes that they don't even know what they're talking about. They don't understand the deeper things of what they're talking about. I wonder if that is a possibility in many movies and many books, that that things tie together in the author's mind or the director's mind or the writer's mind merely because they just fit together well without seeing the bigger picture.
See, that's actually something that I studied in school. There's a director, his name was Tyrone Guthrie, and he was known for producing and redirecting the classics.
Okay.
And his opinion was that oftentimes a great playwright doesn't even know what they're writing.
It was done through me. It was not done by me.
Exactly.
That's the concept
exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about those deeper stories, the deeper meanings that we can find in this monster movie from 1954. What is it? Universal's The Creature from the Black Lagoon, right after this. As the listeners on Thunder Radio are getting caught up on news, weather, and sports
That
other good stuff, we're going to take this opportunity for our special podcast listener-only feedback segment. And as normal, let's hop on our coconut-footed horse,
who goes there?
And head on down over there to Patron St. Phillip's. No, he's going to take us down to King Philip's Stables of Doom.
Come on, will you cut it out?
No, I'm going to do that every single time.
Quite right. Good idea. Quite right. Good idea. Right.
He left a comment on our last episode, which was number 151, wherein we spoke on the Coen Brothers' 2007 Black masterpiece.
Yeah.
No Country for Old Men. You can listen to that at ChristianCinema.com.
He says, hey guys, so glad you covered this movie for the show. You did such a good job.
Wow.
The Coen, thanks, man. The Coens are real hit or miss with me, and this film is a big hit. I get that a lot of people would question the value of doing an episode on such a nihilistic story, but you guys were great. Any honest exploration of how bankrupt nihilism is and begs for the light of Christ's truth to shine on it. Did I read that right?
Any honest exploration shows how bankrupt nihilism is.
Thank you. And begs for the light of Christ's truth to shine on it. I think it was on the episode of the Theonauts, or on an episode of the Theonauts, that I heard Brian Gadawa talking about how important it is for Christians to tell stories which honestly depict what it is we are being redeemed from when we are saved.
Amen. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
And true.
Yeah. Cormac McCarthy has another book called Blood Meridian, which I think is one of the best displays of nihilism in a story. It is based upon an actual history of the Old West, and while his writing is aesthetically attractive and artistic, it describes the utter hopelessness of such a worldview by taking it to its logical conclusions. It's not a book for everyone, but I like it a great deal, in no small part due to its historicity and McCarthy's brilliance as an author. Love the show, guys. Hashtag
my wee lad Gimli.
That's my wee lad Gimli.
Do you have any comments on his comments?
Not
any
yet.
Commentary?
Not yet, but he does.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, he has another one.
Oh.
Because right after he sent that comment, he left another one. By the way, Blood Meridian has a character called the Judge, who makes Anton Segur look like Mary Poppins.
Whoa.
You have been warned.
How absolutely squiffling.
I wonder if that character is squiffling.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. You know, he made some great points for us by bringing up that quote from Brian Godawa on why we cover Halloween films and monster movies and things such as that. They're a great vehicle. And I know that there are Christians out there that would be absolutely aghast that we would even consider covering the films that we do. The Witch last year? Come on. And that was recommended by the youth pastor at the congregation we're a part of.
Shoot.
The Shining. Even something like Goosebumps, you know? And, hey, those things, monsters and those things, they have no effect on me. I walk in the light, brothers and sisters. I'm a Christian. I'm protected from all harm by Jesus Christ. And just keep that in mind. When you're looking at these stories, what is the purpose for examining stories? Brendan, why do you love stories so much? Why did you dedicate your life to storytelling? Just because it's just a hoot?
Is it pastime?
Yeah.
No.
No.
I personally like it because I truly believe that good storytelling will soften a heart the same way that Jesus used parables. And I think that if there's any good news to be heard, if you want to call it the Romans 6, whatever the verse is.
Wait a second. I mean, the Apostle Paul, Jesus himself, Moses, everybody told us to go and march up and down the streets with signs saying that say turn or burn. That's how you go and spread the good news. Turn or burn!
No.
No, that is how you do it. I know it has to be. That's what the Bible says.
Nah.
No.
No, that's not what I read.
No, I didn't read that either.
No.
And I read the Bible a lot, probably more than I should.
Oh, who said that?
I spend an awful lot of time, every single day in the Word. And I and that causes a lot of confusion for me, Brendan, because I see things taking place on Facebook or on YouTube or in the news and Christians speaking out on behalf of other Christians. And I'm thinking, I forgot where that is in the Bible. You're going to have to repoint me to that. But lo, they can't. Okay, and so it causes a lot of consternation and a lot of turmoil, inner turmoil. Wait a second. These people are speaking on behalf of Jesus, on behalf of the Bible, and saying things that I can't find in there.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with that? Well, gosh, you got to love them. And therein lies the crux of the matter.
Because it's the hard thing to do.
It's the hard thing to do because humans
are complicated beasts.
Are complicated beasts.
Man.
So get back to the story, it softens hearts. So in other words, are you saying that that is a way to get a foot in the door?
Sure. Yes. Because if you can go through an emotional experience with somebody in a relational way, then that opens the door to further conversations and maybe even some seed planting.
Wait a second. Now you're talking about what sounds like discipling.
Hey.
And that doesn't sound anything like turn or burn.
I mean, last time I checked, Jesus said, go and make disciples.
No, he said turn or burn. No. Go and tell everybody, yell and scream at people and tell them to turn and burn.
No,
turn or
burn. He just did that one time.
Oh, oh, to the religious leaders?
To the religious leaders.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, isn't it amazing how you don't find examples of him screaming and hollering at or pronouncing woes upon the common folk that are following him seeking, seeking answers?
Mm-hmm.
Now, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. He doesn't say that to
the
woman that's sneaking up behind him on the road just to grab the hem of his garment so that she could be healed. Wow. Okay. Well, anyway, we could go on to another whole discussion of storytelling and the importance of it. But I believe that the listeners, longtime listeners of Finding Christ in Cinema, know exactly why we do this show. For that very reason, yes. Share these movies. Share The Creature from the Black Lagoon with your friends and loved ones this October. And sit there and say, you know what that reminds me of? What do we always say? What's the illustration that we always use, Brendan? Your friend is either going to say, so what?
Or, you know,
really?
Yeah, tell me more.
Yeah, why? How's that? And then now you have an opportunity to share. Now you have an opportunity to really make impact when you say turn or burn.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Anything else, Brendan?
That's exactly. Actually, yes. And I waited to this extra segment to bring it up because if we brought it up in the time segment.
Wait, so I just burned up a bunch of your time.
No, you did not.
No, you're out of time now.
Oh, come on. Come on, really quick. Really quick. Okay, so I was just doing a little perusing this past week, and for some reason, I got the idea, and I'm not the first one to have this idea, I know.
Well, there's nothing new under the sun, so you don't even have to say that.
Well, exactly.
Me and about a billion other people had this idea, but let me share it from my perspective.
Right, right.
There you go.
Well, it just hit me, like, you know, why do we return to movies? Why do we keep, what gives...
Can you lift up your microphone? Man, you're having a hard time
so
with your
sorry.
Mic technique
I'm so
today.
Sorry. I'm so sorry.
Wow, now people can hear you.
Wow. Hey, I can actually hear myself now.
Oh, my God.
We just need to redo the whole show now. But why do we rewatch movies? And I think it's because we need to be reminded continually of what those movies...
their message.
Yeah, what they lend themselves to. Specifically, I was rewatching Zootopia.
Oh,
and this was actually with my niece this past week. She turns 3 2 days from now.
Wow.
On the day that this episode
is
released.
She's an October kid, too?
Yes, she is.
Wow.
Yeah, October 9th. And we were watching Zootopia. I was watching it. She wasn't really. she was coloring on her Moana table. And something struck me, like, why do we keep returning to these films that we've seen, we've gleaned, we've redeemed, you know, whatever. And it just kind of struck me that it's almost like a form of liturgy.
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's a ritual.
Yes.
That serves to remind us of what is good.
And that's fantastic.
And just to get to like a little forward, I guess, to your key text, anything that is good, whatever is noble, whatever is, you know it. And the listeners, if they don't know it now, they'll figure it out when we get to that part of the episode.
Philippians 4:8.
Yeah, there you go. It reminds us of those things. And I did a little Googling, and I was like, drama as liturgy, which is essentially what I just spent the past, you know, couple of years in school.
Yes.
Studying. And I came across this article from the CatholicWorldReport.com.
Uh-huh.
And I like the way this puts it. And I think with... especially the conversation we had today about Creature from the Black Lagoon, I think this hits on something. Let me scroll.
And just a reminder for you folks that are listening to our feedback and extra content segment here, we've already done the show. We do this last. Because we always hope that there may be the chance of sneaking in the feedback segment to the radio show version. Low, it will never
get I don't think it's going to happen. But here's something from the article. It's under the heading, Appearances Do Not Deceive. Another fascinating parallel that is both in theater as well as film and liturgy is that they take us to the depths of the human experience by precisely showing us surfaces. our materialistic age imagines that the only way to know what a thing is by taking it apart.
That sounds like Mark Williams.
Exactly. That's why I brought this up.
Wow.
It's a deeply Gnostic impulse. The notion that what is available to the senses of the ordinary person is contemptible, and that only the initiate with the hidden knowledge truly know what's going on.
Oh my goodness. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow.
So then you like scroll on down a little bit later, and it goes into, you know, why, you know, like the example this uses is for Hamlet, you know.
It's a little tiny pig.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or a little valley, a little. Like that kind of thing.
A little village.
Yeah, a little village.
Yes.
I like pork lets myself.
Yes.
But hey.
I like bacon lit.
So it's like saying Shakespeare didn't want the audience to be affected by Hamlet by watching all the stagecraft going on. He didn't want us to focus on the shadows and the wings, pulling the pulleys and moving the set pieces. That's not what Hamlet is. Hamlet is the story of the character named Hamlet.
That whole concept is talked about, if you recall, in that book, Misreading Scripture with Western Eyes.
Yes, it is.
Oh!
Yes, it is.
Yes, so
I didn't think about it until you just said it, but I know what you're talking about.
If you show up late to a play and you say, what's happened so far, you do not expect the answer dealing with stagehands and scene, you know, props and things like that. You expect to know about the story.
Yeah.
Oh, Brandon. You got to write a blog post about that.
So, shoot. Anyway... But we talk about, how did we get on this rabbit trail? Dissection. Not
something apart.
Not being able to know anything. Unless we break it apart. Unless it's dead, we can dissect it.
Gandalf says the one who breaks things in order to, I can't remember exactly, but in
Hugo.
Order. No. Gandalf.
Oh,
breaks a thing in order to. Basically, to see what it works has left the path of wisdom.
Oh, that's one of the proverbs, the Tolkien proverbs.
Yes.
Now, I have that a bookmark. Hold on.
Okay.
I have that as a bookmark.
Wow, we are really going off the rails on this special segment.
But it's good.
It is.
It's good. No, it's one of the humans that says it. It's not Gandalf.
It is Gandalf.
Are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure?
Breaks. Okay. Brendan, we can't be Googling things as we're supposed to be podcasting here.
What?
No, come on.
Okay, you're right. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Okay, so book two, yeah. Exactly what you just said. He that breaks a thing to find out what it is has left the path of wisdom. Have we gotten to that where we're reading?
We have not.
Okay, so we're getting there.
Yes.
Okay. And even that ties into the themes of unity versus factions.
Yes.
Goodness gracious, Michael. Things are converging.
Oh, it's
been. Stand back.
This has been a convergence.
It has.
There's a convergence in the Force.
It has. If any listeners.
Oh, and Star Wars movie coming out in a couple of months.
Ahead. Goodness gracious. If any listeners are wanting to read that article that I just talked about, the drama of faith, drama as liturgy, and why we keep revisiting certain stories and plays and movies and all that stuff. Link is in the show notes.
Oh, good.
I posted a link to it. It's a very fascinating article, and I think a lot of our core members will click right with it.
Yes.
I believe so.
Absolutely. And, of course, the show notes are linked in our blog post at christincinema.com. When we say show notes, we're talking our Google spreadsheet that Brendan and I work off when we're putting the shows together.
Yes.
Right? That's where that link will be. Anything else, Brendan?
No, that's it. I just wanted to get that out there.
Hey, let's take what you just said and hold on to that and apply it to this second half of the show.
Let's do it.
You be listening to Finding Christ in Cinema. Why, thank you, Jack.
Welcome back to Finding Christ in Cinema, the show where we believe that all the best stories have elements of the greatest story. Even stories that are about a fish man, from millions of years ago that has survived all this time. That is the classic monster trope where he is going after the beautiful lady, right? And we were talking before the break, Brendan, about the concept of writers and creators, directors, people that are telling stories, not always aware of the deeper things of their stories. They merely happen to be deep because it just fit together. Some resolution, maybe some foreshadowing being fulfilled, type and antitype. And there's some great foreshadowing a couple of times in this film. One with the mast, the boom mast on the ship, breaking the first time or cracking the first time.
Yeah.
And that comes into play later on. I can't remember the second example, and it doesn't even matter because we were encouraging our listeners to go and watch this film. The Creature from the Black Lagoon is a great ride, and let's pull out some things. Every once in a while, and I don't generally like to do this, but in the October Ween season, it's perfectly okay for me to pull out the theme of, see what that guy's doing? Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Don't do that, dear brothers and sisters in Christ.
Like in The Shining.
What makes a good villain, Brendan?
Oh, what does make a good villain is that he thinks what he's doing is right.
That's it.
And that there is no other way.
That's it. They believe with all their heart that their way is the right way, or else they wouldn't be doing it that way. They would be doing it a different way. And that's what we see. Let's start here at the very beginning of the story when Dr. Carl Maya discovers this fossilized hand and forearm poking out of the rocks, has no idea what this is because, it has webbed fingers, and that implies that it is amphibian or aquatic in nature. So he knows who he should go and see to try and get some answers, and that is David and Kay. David Reed and Kay, they're ichthyologists. Say that. I'm going to say that word as many times as I can in this.
Good.
Because I want to show that I can say it.
Awesome.
In this show.
I'm not going to try.
He goes, and so Kay meets up with him, and then she summons David up from the depths below. He's a good 40 fathoms underneath the sea, working. Come on up here. We have a visitor.
Show him what brought you back, Carl.
I found this in a limestone deposit dating back to the Devonian Age. I was hoping you experts on marine life could make some identification.
I've never seen anything like this.
Look at the webbing between the fingers, David.
Yeah. Maybe we'll know more about it after I find the rest of the skeleton.
Boy, I'd sure like to be with you when you do.
So would I.
What about your boss? You think you would be interested?
Williams? If there's a chance of any publicity, just try and keep him away.
All right. I found this. What do you think this could be? We need to get an expedition going and things such as that. And David and Kay both saying, I wish I could be with you on that. Boy, this is very interesting. Well, Dr. Maya says, what about your boss? What about your boss? Do you think he'd be interested in funding this expedition? Oh, well, if there's any publicity, any chance of publicity, you betcha. And so they make their way back to the lab, and they have a whole group of men around that Dr. Maya is going to present this this fossil to. What do you guys think of this? And do you think there's a way that we could get some funding for this type of an expedition? And David is going to wax a little bit poetic about the importance of a find such as this.
Well, why don't we make up the expedition? We're here now, and after all, it does come under the heading of our work, doesn't it, David?
Oh, it certainly does. More and more, we're learning the meaning and the value of marine research. Someday, spaceships will be traveling from Earth to other planets. How are human beings going to survive on those planets? The atmosphere will be different. The pressures will be different. By studying these and other species, we add to our knowledge of how life evolved, how it adapted itself to this world. With that knowledge, perhaps we can teach men to adapt themselves to some new world of the future.
Nice speech, David, but there's still a practical side to it. If I sound brash and more like a banker than a scientist, try to remember that it takes money to run an institute like ours. A find of any real importance can be of great financial value to us also.
Certainly your board couldn't disapprove.
It certainly couldn't. Dr. Maya, you've got yourself an expedition.
All right. There is Mark Williams, and he... Well, we know what David has already said, that there's, hey, if there's any chance of publicity, he'll be all over this. Mm-hmm. Well, and then you couple that with this sound clip where he says, I'm a practical man. Okay, it takes money to run these things, these expeditions. Well, there you go. Nothing wrong with that. Publicity will gain, will generate the cash needed in order to go and carry out this expedition. However, when they make their way down to the Amazon, and they're down in Brazil, and they make their way to the original dig site, well, the, aboard the ship, something happens aboard the Rita?
The Rita, okay. Yes.
And that they have commissioned to go on this expedition. Well, Mark insults the captain of the boat and Dr. Maya. And then he attempts to downplay these attacks as Kay because she's a very gentle soul, right? Mm-hmm. Just like, I mean, she's, her character is much like the actress, as you described in her memoirs about this film.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, he attempts to downplay these attacks, and that's what they were. I mean, they were bitter. By simply stating that he always looks forward to success. I didn't mean it as any personal criticism, Doctor. It's just that I always look forward to success. Well, we can still stick that with the first two sound clips. Success would bring in more money, which allows them... success brings in publicity, which brings in more money, which allows them to carry on expeditions such as this. Okay, okay. Well, we'll let that slide. But as they get back to the dig site, and they are now... well, David is growing increasingly frustrated with Mark's behavior, his attitude and drive. At the expedition site, they're frustrated by the lack of discovering more of the fossil.
A world-shaking find, all that. Oh, 8 days. All we dig up are enough stones to pave a road.
You had enough, Mark, or do we keep on digging?
I'll tell you when I've had enough. We failed. That's all people will understand.
Ah. All that anybody's going to understand about this is that we failed. That's a little bit different than it didn't turn out as we hoped for.
Yeah.
Okay? Which often happens in expeditions.
Sure.
So this, now he's antagonist. I'll tell you when we're done. Ah. There's something deeper than just getting the publicity that's needed in order to fund these expeditions. Now, all people are going to see is that we failed. And I always look forward to success, is what he had said. So because David is increasingly frustrated with this type of behavior, on the boat, Kay tries to soften David's mood toward him.
David, about Mark.
Well, what about him?
Try to understand.
I've been trying. Somebody ought to tell him his ambition is showing.
It won't do any good, I know. Long before you came to work with us, I tried. But there's this to say for him. He's produced some important findings.
He's also taken credit for some important findings.
Now, Kay is... Kay reminds me of my wife. Because my wife won't say bad things about people. Frustrates me. No. She'll, you know, just like that. Well, that's not nice to say. You have to see things from their side and understand this. And but she doesn't deny what David is saying. Seems to me his ambition is showing. Well, yeah, that's true.
Sure.
That's true.
Yeah.
But he's a guy that makes these things happen. And a lot of important finds have been made. What does David say? Yeah. And he takes credit for them. He takes credit for a lot of... This is looking like an I problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
I always look forward to success. All that anybody's going to see is that we failed. He's got an I problem. Now, preparing to go back into the depths of the Black Lagoon. So all this intrigue that's going on and people are dying. People are dying! Right? And they are trapped in this
lagoon.
It's
like one by one, yeah.
And, well, Mark prepares a harpoon gun. And Kay pleads with him that whatever the species, if he leaves it alone, it won't bother him. And David continues to try and reason with Mark.
Mark, we're out for photographs for study, not trophies. This thing alive and in its natural habitat is valuable to us.
Well, why settle for a photo when we can get the real thing?
You don't sound like a scientist. You sound like some big game hunter out for the kill.
We may not be back home, David, but you're still working for me.
For me. You're working for me. You do what I say. Hey, what's the best thing that we could do right now? We could go ahead and take this thing home with us. Oh, then they can't call us a failure. They can't say we failed. Maybe I can take credit for this if I'm the one to shoot it. Right? Do you see what this character is? This is a great character study, I think. I think he makes a great villain because he's doing what he thinks is right.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, what he thinks is right is going to benefit him. But Mark continues on his single-minded quest to get the monster, and David cannot reason with them anymore.
Mark, I'm for getting out of this lagoon just as fast as we can.
Without taking what we came for?
We didn't come here to fight with monsters. We're not equipped for it. We came here to find fossils. Later, we can come back with a properly equipped expedition. Be reasonable.
Reasonable? Oh, what else could I expect? But you, Carl, it means as much to you.
You're driving yourself too hard, and the rest of us along with you.
We are staying until we get him. Or until somebody else gets killed. No, we're not. Lucas, we're getting out of here just as fast as we can.
I'll make the decisions around here.
He is wholly given over to his ambition, to his, quote, practical side, for chance of publicity, for a chance to take credit for this find. He is not listening to reason at all. In fact, as the scene goes on, the captain of the ship says, aboard the ship, the capitan makes the decisions. You know? And has to restrain him with a knife to the throat. You need to settle down, mister. He's not settling down. He is out of control. Now he's wholly unhinged and out of control. And as David prepares to make a final dive into the lagoon to clear that entrance so that the Rita can get to safety so nobody else has to die, Mark insists on going, saying that this monster is the biggest find anyone's ever made.
I'm going in with you. Mark, all we're interested in right now is getting the entrance to this lagoon cleared.
I'll be the bait for him.
Oh, Mark, get out of my way.
Let it come for me, David. It'll give you a chance to get at him.
You're crazy.
Crazy to want to bring back the biggest find anyone's ever made? Oh, you don't know what this can mean, David, to all of us.
Mark, you're not going with me.
I am.
And it gets turns into fisticuffs. Mm-hmm. I am going with you. This is the biggest find that anybody... Think of what it'll mean for us. Think of what it'll mean for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it comes down to. Brendan, we failed. That's all people will understand. That's the only driving factor is recognition, fame, fortune. Wow. Proverbs 14:12, Brendan, really encapsulates what a good villain is. Okay. Out of the KJV, let's read it out of the Authorized Version.
The only version that Jesus read.
That's right. There is a way which seemeth right unto a man. Right?
Right.
But the end thereof are the ways of death.
God wills it.
The ways of destruction. There is a way which seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. And that's what plays out in this film is death. And the ways of this villain is not the creature from the Black Lagoon. The villain is the man that is so driven by success and ambition that he is willing to sacrifice every single person on that boat. Because all people understand if we don't come back with something is that we failed. There will be no publicity. There will be no funding. There will be no opportunity for me to take credit for the find. This concept of ambition reminds me of 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, where Paul is writing to the believers in Thessalonica. And he's talking about himself and the apostles and the messengers that are going forth and spreading the good news. He says, "For we speak as messengers approved by God to be entrusted with the good news." This is 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 4 out of the NILT, New Living Translation. He alone, our purpose is not to please God. I mean, blah, blah, blah. Oh my goodness. Mulligan, you can't do that. Our purpose is to please God, not people. He alone examines the motives of our hearts. Never once did we try to win you with flattery, as you well know. And God is our witness that we were not pretending to be your friends just to get your money. As for human praise, we've never sought it from you or anyone else. As apostles of Christ, we certainly had the right to make some demand of you. But instead, we were like children among you, or we were like a mother feeding and caring for her own children. We loved you so much that we shared with you not only God's good news, but our own lives too. Jump down to verse 11 and 12. And you know that we treated each of you as a father treats his own children. We pleaded with you, encouraged you, and urged you to live your lives in a way that God would consider worthy, for he called you to share in his kingdom and glory. That's the very opposite of seeking publicity, mm-hmm. of seeking to take credit for fines, for worrying about whether people would call him a failure. This is the exact opposite attitude. Oh, attitude. That's like the attitude of Jesus, isn't it, Brendan? Here we go. Here is your key text. And how many times have we read this on Finding Christ in Cinema? Philippians chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. I'm going to read this out of the KEB, the Common English Bible.
Wonderful.
Therefore, if there is any encouragement in Christ, any comfort in love, any sharing of the Spirit, any sympathy, complete my joy by thinking the same way, having the same love, being united and agreeing with each other. Don't do anything for selfish purposes, but with humility, think of others as better than yourself. Instead of each person watching out for their own good, watch out for what is better for others. Adopt the attitude that was in Christ Jesus. That is the attitude that was in Christ Jesus that Paul is explaining to the Philippians, that Paul explained to the church at Thessalonica. Don't seek your own glory. Don't do anything but seek to serve others. Watch out for what is better for others, because that is the attitude that Christ had. That is the Christian walk. That is what we are to do, brothers and sisters. See what Mark Williams did? Don't do that at all. Mm-hmm. Anything like that. Don't do anything like that, because there's a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death and destruction. Brendan, any questions, comments, piggybacks, editorials, off-the-wall remarks?
Yes.
Good.
So much yes. Michael, there is a way which seemeth right unto man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. I agree with you.
Oh, good.
And I'd like to tack on to that.
You agree with God.
Yes. Man. I would like to tack on to that a nice little phrase that we Westerners like to use, the path of least resistance.
Yes, we do like that.
And I think that applies to that. This concept, what you're speaking of, necessarily, because Mark Williams. Yes, thank you.
Mark, the villain?
Yes, the villain. He is choosing the path of least resistance. It's easy to look out for me, myself, and I.
Yes, it is.
It's not easy to do the greater good.
Oh, great
which
point.
Which is, I like to, and I save this to my phone because this is worth saving to your phone. Patrick Mead.
Yes.
By the way.
Patrick Mead should always be on your phone.
Patrick Mead, and if anything, just follow him on Twitter and get to know him that way.
At Traveling Mead, M-E-A-D.
Yes, yes. He says, loving everybody is easy because it's a concept. Loving those right in front of you is hard because they are the reality. Do the hard thing.
Amen.
It's hard for Mark Williams to do the hard thing. It's really easy for David Reed and for Kay because they are all about encouraging life in its natural habitat, even if it's with a monster that they don't fully understand. Now, what you've been talking about is the relationship between, you know, man versus man. But now let's talk about man versus monster, which is really the selling point for this whole movie.
That's what got people's rear ends
exactly,
in the seats, huh?
Exactly.
That'll sell popcorn.
And
extra
exactly.
butter, of course. Find a seat smacked in the middle.
Yep. And this relationship that they have, it's obvious that Mark Williams doesn't care for this monster.
He doesn't care for anybody, though.
He thinks the only way to find out anything about it, and we may go into this deeper in the feedback section.
Segment,
thank you. He thinks the only way to learn more about it is to catch it, kill it, dissect it, learn everything he can about it that way.
And sell it.
Yeah, make money, publicity, everything. David Reed and Kay, they want to see it live in its own natural way.
That was a great rhyme. David and Kay want to see it live in its own natural way.
You're right.
Yes, there's a children's book.
I'm a poet and didn't know it. Wow. Make a rhyme every time.
There you go.
And where it really buckles down to in the end of it, though, is that even in all this man versus man and monster versus man thematic conflicts, mercy still shines through at the end. At the very end, it's a very brief glimpse, but when it hits, it's so affecting. It's just powerful. The monster, Gilman, has kidnapped Kay. He has brought her to his underground lair, and everyone rushes in to save Kay. And they do so.
She hits her head. They say cut.
Yeah. I had to refilm everything.
Yes.
the guy in the gill suit has to get out.
Yes. Dry off a little bit. Apologize.
Okay. So sidebar, another anecdote with this movie is that one of the stuntmen, I can't remember who, but one of them really had to use the bathroom, and he was still in the suit when he went to a popular tourist destination that was like maybe just a couple of seconds away. And he went to the restroom and he came out and there was like a mom and a daughter standing right there. They both screamed and lost it and ran the other direction.
Oh,
anyway,
longing for simpler times like
there,
that.
There you go. Back to the story, back to where mercy shines through. It's in this last little clip that we're about to hear. Gunfire has opened up on the monster, and he is seemingly going to attack those who are shooting him, but because of a little mercy, something else actually happens.
No more.
That's enough.
Let him go. That's enough. Yes. Because David, and I think it's because, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I think it's because David Reed and Kay realize, because they're so in tune with this monster, they're so in tune with another life form. Yes, he's a monster and they don't fully understand him, but you don't have to fully understand something to love it.
Oh!
And to let it live.
Whoa!
Hey, you don't have to fully understand something.
You get a dinger for that. That's a point.
Oh, thanks, man. You don't have to fully understand it to love it.
Okay, you get a point for that. Yes.
Okay.
Are you getting repeat again?
Sure. I'm like Pavlov.
He's racking
over here
up the points.
Man, it rings a bell. They can understand even if those who are firing the guns, and I think it's the captain and the senior doctor, whose name has escaped me, they're behind the guns. They can't really notice, but Kay and David, yes, they can understand it. Like, whoa, he's backing off now. We can stop firing at him. Let's show a little mercy. Let him go. Let him live. If he does live after this, you know, let him do so.
Do you have a verse for this?
I do. I got to get to it really quick. It's Matthew 5:7. This time out of the ESV, the English Standard Version. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. David and Kay and the rest of them were at death's door, really, with this monster. And they chose to show a little mercy to the monster, and the monster let them alone and went on his way. That's all there is to it.
Great message.
That's all there is to it.
There's some good Christian themes in this film that you can use when you are, I don't even know where it is. When you are with Chris Pratt sitting on your
double-decker couch
watching Creature from the Black Lagoon, you can share the good news of the Bible. See what that guy did? You don't have to be like that. You don't have to be a slave to sin anymore, because that results in death. The free gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ, and have mercy on people, right?
All right.
Brandon, what are we going to do next week on this October Ween?
Well, next time we'll be looking at another Jeff Nichols film, Midnight Special.
Ah, and that'll be the week after next. We're taking off next week for One Day of Hope and some radio drama stuff.
Yes.
Listeners, we won't be here next, but Finding Christ in Cinema is next week. But Finding Christ in Cinema is part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, a listener-supported ministry using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into all the world and proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. For all the movies that we've covered and a list of those films and all that stuff, get over to christincinema.com.
You can call us up on the voice line at 507-407-GCTN. That's 507-407-4286. But let's say you want to listen to the good old podcast.
I do.
You can go to iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play Music and search them all for Finding Christ in Cinema.
And for all the shows that we produce here at the Great Commission Transmission Network, including our brothers in Texas,
the Theonauts!
And our super duper secret J.R.R. Tolkien show, The Secret Fire Podcast. Get over to our official site at gctnetwork.com. Mr. Brandon Taylor, anything else?
No, I think we got it.
And that is a wrap.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
At gctnetwork.com.
This is your Great Commission transmission.